Choir. Standing up and clapping for the choir. Thank you, everybody, and thank you, choir, and thank you, Mary Kerrigan, and the other leadership of the choir for supplying us with that beautiful music. Okay, so I guess it's my turn now. I'm still getting used to this live streaming business, you know? It's really different, very different to speak to an empty house, but thank goodness I have my friends behind me today. That's really good, except some of them are staring at me. You know, that Napoon can't take his eyes off of me for some reason. Anyway, I wanted to start with something that I read on the Wisdom of Facebook. Somebody, Brother Kevin, actually posted this on my wall, and I wanted to share it with you. It said that the quarantine is turning us all into dogs. First of all, we are told to sit and stay. And like my dogs, we're not very good at sitting and staying. We spend the day roaming around the house looking for food that we can snatch up. If we get too close to a stranger, someone will say, no, no, leave it, leave it. Can't get close to strangers anymore. And the best part is that we are really excited by going for a ride in the car. My husband the other day needed a prescription from Rite Aid, and I was like, I want to go to Rite Aid, I want to go to Rite Aid, I want to go to Rite Aid, just like our dogs do when we take out the leashes. So that's what it's come to, people. We are like our dogs now. You know, and one of the beautiful things about the pandemic is that there has been a lot of humor that has been released about the quarantine and the pandemic and what we're going through. But it's been going on for a while now, and I'm not sure what others are feeling. I do speak to a lot of people in the congregation all the time, and for a lot of us at the beginning, there was kind of this surge of adrenaline, like, we've got this, we've got this. But it drags on and on and on, and we're about to enter into a new phase where we're going to be taking some new chances and doing some new things and seeing if we can reintegrate into building back the economy and how we can do that in a safe and productive manner. And I know that that brings up other things for us, other fears and other concerns. So no matter where you are on this spectrum, whether you're loving the pandemic and loving staying at home, or whether you're terrified, or whether you're concerned about the re-entry into society and what that's going to look like, not only for us, but for the whole world, I thought today I would talk a little bit about fear and love. The name of my talk is Love's Defining Moment. Love's defining moments, rather. And, you know, many spiritual teachers say that really there are only two things, two ways to be, either in fear or in love, that everything else is an offshoot of fear and love. In my mind, in my heart, I believe that those two are intertwined. They're kind of like a Möbius strip. You know, a Möbius strip is sort of like an infinity symbol with a little twist in it, so there's no real inside or outside. They're constantly interplaying together, fear and love. But the point of the Möbius strip and the point of fear and love being intertwined is that at any moment, no matter what is going on, we can choose to be in love or we can choose to be in a state of fear. So today, I hope to provide us with some thoughts about that and how we can continue to be in love, because the world needs us to be in love. You know, they say that desperate times call for desperate measures, and the world is waiting for us to step into a greater and greater expression of love for ourselves and for all beings. So I'm going to start with saying some of the things that we do to get in the way of love versus being the way of love. That Zen story that Hugh read about the horse and the man and the villagers, the village people I like to call them, that they, Jennifer's back there doing YMCA, that they were expressing a certain kind of fear that many of us express a lot. Is that we like to put things into categories. This is bad, this is good. The farmer just said, we'll see. He was able to appreciate the isness of being. And that's really how it is much of the time. There is just an isness to being. Everything just is, and we are projecting goodness or badness upon it. Now, I have another story of something that happened in our household that has to do with some of the other things that we do to be the way of fear versus the way of love. And this is kind of it's minutiae. It's a very small story, but sometimes it's helpful to look at the little things because there's not so much attached to it so that you can actually look at it and be objective. So this is a story about our gardener Tony, who we love. We've been in a friendship with him for, I don't know, 12 years or so. He's helped us create a beautiful lawn for all that time, and we just adore him. And my husband is very particular about the yard, so it's really great that we have a good gardener. Tony is Catholic, and you'll see why that's important later on. So we've also been very strict about the quarantine because my husband is in his 80s, and we want to honor the fact that he's in what is considered a high-risk group. So we haven't let anybody in our house, and we haven't let anybody in our yards except for Tony. We let Tony come in to cut the grass and then to do the weeding and whatnot in the backyard. Well, there was one Monday, last Monday as a matter of fact, when Tony came. And after he left, my husband came into the kitchen where I was washing dishes. And he said, "I found a crucifix in the backyard. I found a crucifix in the backyard." And it wasn't a happy crucifix either. I don't know if there is such a thing, but you know, some of the crucifixes look like it's only a flesh wound. The Jesus looks like he's not in so much pain. But this one was not a happy crucifix, okay? And my husband said to me, "Do you think Tony left it there because he saw like the Buddha and the Ganesh and some of the Islamic symbols that we have, and he thinks that we need to be Catholic?" I'll tell you what the source of the crucifix was later on. But first, let's look at the tendencies that we have towards fear, towards leading with fear versus leading with love. Now, it's not like my husband was terrified of Tony the gardener. Had he left us a crucifix, it would have been fine. But, you know, one of the things that he did was that he looked at the logical facts and used the past to predict the present and to predict the future as well. We do that all of the time. We use what we think are the facts to predict the present and to predict the future. So in this coronavirus thing, you know, none of us have really experienced this before, but we're looking at all of the numbers and we're saying, this must mean this. What if it doesn't? What if there's something greater than what we think it means? Ernest Holmes said that principle is not bound by precedent, meaning that what comes before cannot put any limits on the spiritual principle of love or joy or forgiveness or whatever it is that wants to emerge in the situation. So if we are able to take away the precedent, to take away the power of the precedent and just rely on principle, which means turning our attention to love, turning our attention to the most loving solution, then that opens us up to greater being. Another thing that I noticed that happened in my husband's conversation with me is that happens to all of us is that we often go for the negative bias. You know, our brains are made that way. I spoke about this in church when there were actually people in it several months ago, where if we have something that happens, we don't really understand it, we tend to make up a story about it. And the story is often negative for our protection. It feels like protection. The story is often negative because it is easier to tolerate anticipating something negative than it is easier to tolerate uncertainty. Our species does not like uncertainty very much. And so my husband made up a story about how Tony was against our religion. Tony was opposed to the Buddha or Ganesh or, like I said, some of the other symbols that we have. So he planted a crucifix in our backyard. When we do that, when we allow precedent to bind principle, when we go for a negative bias because it feels less comfortable than uncertainty, then we cut off possibilities. We cut off possibilities. So if we're in a place where we can court uncertainty and relish it and be comfortable and actually be delighted by uncertainty, if we're in a place where we understand where principle is not bound by precedent, where principle is greater than precedent, then something great will open for us. In this situation, My husband did not make the leap because it was just a very short conversation. He would have over time, I'm sure. But he just asked me, how did that crucifix get there? Did Tony put it there? And I said, oh, wait a minute. No, it was me. I've had that crucifix for years. Barb gave it to me at the church. You know, and don't you remember sometimes when people come over, like when Chris comes over, I give it to Chris so he can ward off the dogs like that, you know? And actually, I had it in the backyard because I was taking pictures of my guinea pig next to it. I was doing a photo study of the guinea pig with religious symbols. Principle is not bound by precedent. I have never done that before. Yes, Heisenberg. I'm going to paraphrase Heisenberg. Marriage is not only stranger than we think, marriage is stranger than we can think. And Heisenberg said that about reality. You know, so in his wildest dreams, Hugh probably did not understand that I was there in the backyard with a crucifix, taking pictures of my guinea pig and my minister's stole, getting ready to create a PowerPoint slide presentation movie of all of the practitioners' dogs in their stoles. This is what I do in the face of quarantine. But that possibility was there all along. It's just that something had to open up for him to see it. And the same thing is true for us with the coronavirus. You know, we may be stuck in fear, no matter whether it's a big fear or a little fear, like the one I was talking about with the gardener and the crucifix, but we may be stuck in the condition of fear. And fear is a false condition. Fear is the absence of love. So while we're stuck in fear, this beautiful love is all around us. But if we can just open our eyes so that we may see, if we can open our hearts to receive the love that is already there for us, then something shifts beautifully. Something shifts within us. And this is something, you know, Ernest Holmes said, don't believe what I say, go try it. If we just try this, then we'll see that it's real. It's more real than the fear. The willingness to open to love is more real than the fear. So, as you know, sometimes people want to know how. How do I shift from fear to love? What do I do? What I've been doing so far hasn't been working. So what can I do to shift my consciousness from fear to love? Is it about arranging what's out there so it's not quite so scary anymore? Not at all. It's about arranging what's in here, that thing that you can't even see, arranging that in a new and creative way to call forth a greater sensation of love. Thank God we have our wonderful congregation and our Facebook community that are so well versed in these things that they inspire me every week when I ask the Facebook question and they provide me with all kinds of answers. Here is a list of what people in our congregation do to move from fear to love. Let's see, where is it? Okay, so the question was, a fill-in-the-blank question, it's blank helps me move from fear to love. Jamie wrote, relinquishing control helps me move from fear to love. Jonna wrote, love helps me move from fear to love. Janet, remembering to breathe helps me move from fear to love. Annette, self-care. Patty, turning within. Carolinda, remembering who she is and going to the beach helps her move from fear to love. Dot, knowing God within her and as her with surrender. Shelley, stillness. Heather, her dogs help her move from fear to love. Lonnie, gratitude. Bernie, laughter, appreciation, connection. Jennifer, curiosity. Nancy, treating herself with great respect. Karen, being grateful right here, right now. Susie, laughter and shared music. Nick said that I help him move from fear to love. Thank you, Nick. Maggie, asking what evidence do I have to prove? What evidence do I have to prove I should live in fear? Fred, gratitude helps him move from fear to love. Dave, playing his new alto sax helps him move from fear to love. Another Dave, Ernest Holmes, helps him move from fear to love. Devin, hearing a sermon from the beach. Mark, practicing the third force. Reverend Stephen Rambo, Gratitude and service to others help him move from fear to love. Mia, trusting that this is part of our path and seeing miracles in the animal kingdom. Amy, forest bathing. Kelly, meditation, breath, gratitude, saying, I am love through all I see before me, and her dog, Lucky. Gia, prayer and meditation. Dina, her hands in the earth in the garden, remembering oneness with Source. That helps her move from fear to love. Susan, believing that light overcomes the darkness. Carol, moving her attention from her mind to her heart. Jill, being still enough to hear her inner wisdom. Another Bernie, Jonna's father, Bernie Shane. I don't know if that's his last name, but Bernie, let's just say that. Bernie says that the facts help him move from fear to love. Vicky, the ocean and the stars. Kim, being grateful. Shauna Lee, recalibrating herself, helps her move from fear to love. Sylvia, remembering herself. Debbie, turning her attention inward and taking a deep breath. Jan, nature. Mark, meditation. Rick, riding his motorcycle. Cheryl, hugging her grandkids. Doreen, being of service. GC, believing in his spiritual connection. Bill, surrendering to spirit. Gina, meditation. Ed, counting his blessings. Kathy, seeing beauty and perfection in everything. Reverend Bonnie Rose, what helps me move from fear to love is something that I learned to say in the South. All y'all. All y'all help me move from fear to love. You did yesterday, you do every day, you will every time I read this list on Facebook, and I hope that you take the opportunity to do the same, to read the list, even if you haven't contributed to it, to love on it, to click like or love or whatever you want to click on it, and to just see all of the possibilities. This is just a tip of the iceberg of the possibilities that we have of moving ourselves from fear to love. And folks, it is so very, very important that we do that right now. You know, as I mentioned before, that we are in unprecedented times. That's what a lot of the newscasters are saying, that these are completely unprecedented times. And unprecedented times call for unprecedented measures. Unprecedented measures. So what this says to me is that we are called to do even more in terms of our spiritual work. We are called to go deeper, and we're also called to go wider. We are called, even though we're stuck at home, to reach out and to ripple out that heart center of love to the world around us, because we are a blessing. You are a blessing. And everything that you think contributes to either the increase of fear in the world or the increase of love in the world. So let us collectively choose right here this morning to increase the amount of love that is circulating in this world, because love has power. Love is the most powerful thing that there is. You know, when I was looking at the Facebook posts about the ways that everybody moves from fear to love, I was thinking, are there any common themes here? And certainly gratitude was a theme, and nature, the stars and the beach, and some people put their dogs. Only one person put his motorcycle, but I know that that helps him. There was only one alto sax, but I know that helps him too. One of the things that came up a lot was the idea of self-remembering, of remembering who we are. And what I like to say is that we are that place that is aware yet unaffected. There is a place within us that is so deep, it is like the depths of the ocean, and there can be all this turmoil going on the top, but the depths of the ocean remains calm and steady. I was listening to something the other day, and speaking with a friend about it as well, who talks about, you know, who we really are underneath this skin of, or this suit of skin that we wear always. You know, and if you were to look at somebody, like, let's say you're looking at somebody's abdomen. I'm picking the abdomen for a reason. Probably shouldn't go around staring at people's abdomens, but anyway, let's say you're looking at somebody's abdomen, and you look at it and you see, oh, that's part of a person. And then you get closer and you say, oh, look, that's just an expanse of skin. You're right up against it. And then somehow you're in surgery and they open it up and you say, wow, that's a bunch of organs and blood. And then you get a microscope and you say, wow, that's a bunch of molecules. And then you get a more powerful microscope and you say, wow, look at that. There's a nucleus and protons and electrons. And then you get an even more powerful microscope and you go smaller. And what you ultimately come up with is empty space. You come up with empty space, that we are mostly empty space. And that empty space is the energy force that drives the entire universe. And I would posit that, is that a word, posit? I don't know. Jennifer says it is. Posit, okay. I would posit that that empty space is actually love. Love is the source of everything. And so when you think about some of the fears that you're having, when you think about some of the decisions that you have to make in this time of intense uncertainty where nobody knows what's going on, if you don't know what's going on, you are not alone. Nobody knows what's going on, including me. If you were able to hold that decision or that fear or that isolation or that loneliness or whatever it is that's troubling you in the context of that empty space that is really who you are, even though you can't see it, it is really who you are. If you can hold that fear in the context of empty space and see what the empty space would do with it, you'll see that the empty space remains aware and unaffected. The empty space enfolds it, it unwraps it, it enwraps it and it unwraps it as you see what is at the core of that fear is really love trying to express but not knowing how to get out. I'm going to close with something that Peter, who did the meditation, he shared this in his Tuesday night meditation. He does the kindness meditation every Tuesday night. He's also a third grade teacher. And I know for me, sometimes when I am working with difficult concepts, I need to go back to third grade or sixth grade. I think I'm really like the mental age of a sixth grader, so that works really well for me. But anyway, Peter wrote this thing for his third graders that I'm going to adapt to help them. I think he called it demonstrifying the COVID-19 virus. So this is based on Peter, but I'm adapting it for us. So COVID is spelled C-O-V-I-D, and then there's a 19. So C. C is no longer the word, the first letter of a scary virus. C is for caring. And what about self-care? What if you could do, if you could promise this week to do 19 acts of exquisite self-care? Does that sound like a big commitment? It does. I know that the three people in the congregation are nodding. It does sound like a big commitment. It's a lot to do. But dang it, I'm going to try it. 19 acts of exquisite self-care. And as you become grounded in your self-care, as you know that you deserve, as you know that you are loved and loving, because self-care has that impact upon us, move on to O. O can stand for obstacles turning into opportunities. What if you were to make a list of 19 things in your life, virus-related or not, and say, okay, these are 19 obstacles that I'm seeing. And if you don't see 19, that's fine. But if these are the obstacles that I'm seeing, how can I turn this, through the power of my thinking, how can I turn this into an opportunity? Because it's there. It's truly there. Even if you can't see it, it's there. We don't have to bind principle with precedent. It's like the crucifix in the garden, you know? It's not what we thought it was, right? Opportunity, obstacle is opportunity, always. Always, without fail. So 19 obstacles into opportunity. The next thing is V. V is for vision. Let us vision 19 miracles that could come forth from this situation. You know, some of you who are my friends on Facebook, and I encourage all of you to friend me on Facebook. I would love to hear from you. Bonnie Hess Rose, you'll see it on the group. But one of the miracles that was predicted about this time was that with people backing off, that there was going to be a resurgence in nature. And I saw proof of that yesterday when I was driving up the 150 and I saw a black bear standing in the middle of the road. I managed to stop in time. The dogs barked their heads off. I took a picture. But that, to me, seems like a resurgence of nature. And ironically, I looked up the bear in these Native American wisdom cards that I have, and it said that the bear is about hibernation. The bear is about turning within and reflecting. And isn't that what we're all doing right now in our homes for this period of quarantine? So 19 visions of new miracles coming forth from this time. I'm up to I. So I is for intentional spiritual practice. Moving past our comfort zone and perhaps meditating just a little bit more and perhaps praying just a little bit deeper, doing the Change Me prayer every day again like we did when we were teaching that class by Tosha Silver, doing acts of kindness as a spiritual practice, doing service as an act of kindness, doing intentional service to help keep ourselves active in the realm of moving from fear to love. See, that's the thing. The concept in itself is not enough because we have bodies and we need to engage our bodies on the earth plane in terms of expanding our understanding of these principles. So 19 intentional acts of service, spiritual practice, kindness, whatever it is you want to call it. And then D. D reminds me of decision. When we're back together again, chances are we'll sing a song by Daniel Namad called Love Is My Decision. And D is about making a firm and clear decision for love. Today I choose love. Today I decide on love. Today I might feel fearful, but I'm willing to look at that. And I'm willing to love my fear. I'm willing to look at it. I'm willing to see it. But I also am willing to release it, to surrender it, to give it back to God and allow it to be transformed so that I may choose love. In fact, seeing it, looking at it, returning it to God is already a choice for love. So D is for decision, 19 choices to return your fear back to God. And then there's another function of D as well, and that is do it again. Do the whole thing again. Care, self-care, obstacles to opportunities, vision miracles, intentional spiritual practice, and decide on love. And then do it again. Let's take care of that now. It's been a pleasure speaking with you this morning. I love you all, and now we'll pray.